Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is Farm Credit Council President and CEO Todd Van Hoos, who joins us to discuss the ag finance picture going into the upcoming growing season. But first, here's this week's headlines. President Zelensky of Ukraine addressed Congress this week and pleaded for help from the United States to fight back the Russian invasion. The Biden administration pledged additional aid Wednesday, in addition to the roughly $13.6 billion in Ukrainian assistance provided in the omnibus spending package. The commodity markets had another volatile week as traders, producers, and market speculators alike all seek to get a handle on the impacts the war will have on global wheat and corn production. The Biden administration is looking for a new agricultural trade official. Elaine Trevino has withdrawn her nomination to be the chief ag negotiator at the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative. She was first picked for the job in September, and a delay in her confirmation process led her to believe there was no timely path forward to gain confirmation. She said in a letter to withdraw from consideration that she looks forward to joining the administration in another capacity. The news leaves both the USTR position and the Trade Undersecretary slot at the Department of Agriculture both lacking a nominee. Finally, the Federal Reserve approved an interest rate hike for the first time in 3 years. The Fed will raise interest rates by 0.25%, but also signaled more rate increases by the end of the year to the tune of about 2% in total increases. The change comes as the farm economy faces pressure from all sides as producers grapple with high input prices and fluctuating market conditions. Farm Credit Council President and CEO Todd Van Hoos says those factors are indeed weighing on the sector, which will feel an impact, albeit a limited one, from the increase.
I think interest rates are going to go up. I think everybody expects that. The markets have sort of built in the expectation that interest rates are going to rise. But I checked this morning. The long-term 30-year interest rate out there in treasuries is still around 2%. And so, yeah, we went up 25 basis points yesterday. And I expect we'll go up almost 100 basis points by the end of the year, maybe even a little more. But we're still in an era of historically low interest rates. If you look over time, you know, even if they rise a whole percent, we're still talking about very, very low interest rates. And so, you know, people who've been around for a long time in agriculture understand that 4%, 5%, 6%, that's still a pretty good interest rate out there. It's still pretty affordable. It's nowhere near where we got in the 1980s where we had 16%, 18%.
Right. You know, speaking as someone who grew up on a farm that was purchased in 1981.
Good timing.
Anytime interest rates come up, folks can get a little bit nervous. But you're saying we're not looking at the 1980s.
No, not at all. I mean, I think we've got a long way to go. And especially if you look at the interest rate, this is a little technical, but if you look at the interest rate curve, what you see is a flattening. And so you've got competing interests in the interest rate market right now. You've got the Fed pushing short-term interest rates up a little bit, but the economy is really keeping interest rates down on the long end. So the curve is starting to flatten. And as a result of that, you know, if you're still looking for 30-year money out there to buy that farm, it's pretty affordable right now.
Mm-hmm. So, in the grand scheme of things, I should just ask you, what do you anticipate as the long-term impact then on production agriculture as a result of this move?
Clearly, we're looking at probably, you know, I've heard the Fed forecasted 6 interest rate increases across the year. If they're all 25 basis points, that's a point. That's a percent and a half. And so, you know, given that that's movement between 2 and 3.5. If you work that through your balance sheet and income statement, it's just not that big an impact. So we're not expecting a huge impact on agriculture for this.
So as we look broadly, you know, obviously this is something that was said to be done to potentially impact inflation. And that's obviously right. a top of mind issue for the American consumer. For the American producer, as a financer of many of them, what are you and what are farm credit lenders hearing about inflation from producers?
We hear a lot more about inflation than we do interest rates. I mean, you know, and it's not just inflation, it's also availability of inputs. And so people coming into this growing season, we're seeing every possible cost rise, fuel, fertilizer, seed, everything rise. And in some cases, exponential rise. And so that's very much on their minds. At the same time, people were saying, I'm worried I'm not even going to be able to get what I need. And so I think a lot of those concerns have largely been mollified. People are getting what they need now, but it is very expensive. So people are talking about inflation.
Right, so we're seeing the rising cost of inputs, also seeing the rising price for commodities as well. So we're seeing these competing escalations. But I guess I wonder, are we looking at a net negative or a net negative for producers once all of this is taken into account?
I think that's going to be a producer by producer call. Let me give you an example. I was talking to a guy yesterday who is a wheat farmer, and I was having lunch, and I said, "Boy, I bet you're loving these wheat prices." And he said, "Yeah, but I contracted last fall." And so I have a sense that a lot of farmers saw that margin opportunity in the fall, maybe across the winter, and locked in a price because they could match that to what they covered in crop insurance, right? And so locked in a margin back then, hopefully they had also locked in their production cost. So that's going to be a real management challenge for farmers.
We'll be right back with more from Todd after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. Between input prices and inflation, a number of things are currently weighing on the farm economy, but Van Hoos says the sector overall is in good financial condition.
It's pretty good. I mean, if you look at net farm income, the last 2 years have been very, very strong. Now, a lot of that was government payments, especially 2 years ago. And if you look at USDA's projections now, you're still seeing almost historically high net farm income projections from USDA for this year. With a much smaller percentage of that coming out of government payments. And so the market returns this year are expected to be very, very good. Now, that said, there's still some healing to be done out there, right? And there's very much an individual farm determinant here. And so, by and large, the farm economy is in really good shape right now. There's still supply chain issues out there. There's still inflation worries out there. You know, we tell people all the time, this is exactly why it's complex out there, why managing farms is a very complex enterprise, and why today's farmers are the most technologically sophisticated managers we've ever seen in agriculture, from the financial side, from the agronomic side, all across. The ability for American farmers to manage this complex business that they run has never been greater.
Mm-hmm. So looking less on the producer side of things and more specifically on the farm credit system side of things, seeing inflation, seeing volatility, mm-hmm. Seeing a lot of issues. In terms of the health of the system, what does all this mean?
Oh, the farm credit system is extraordinarily strong. And that is good news for agriculture because agriculture, think about the time we're in history right now, right? We spent generations moving towards globalization, and maybe we're moving away from that now, right? Maybe there's some decoupling in the economy out there. And so whenever you see these kind of shifts in the large economy, you get a lot of turmoil, a lot of volatility, and we're seeing that right now. And so one of the advantages agriculture has is this incredibly strong farm credit system that is supposed to be there in good times and bad that underpins the whole thing. And so we feel very good about it. We feel very good about our positioning to be able to support farmers through this turmoil because we expect some tumultuous markets.
Well, tumultuous markets, I imagine, are partially due to the fact that there is the invasion of a major wheat and corn producer taking place on the other side of the world right now. We've seen the short-term market volatility as a result of the invasion of Ukraine. But I'm curious, how does the length of that invasion, the length of that war, that conflict over there, what role does the length of that conflict play in the health of the farm economy here in the U.S.?
Well, I think the health of the length of this war, I think, has a huge impact on the overall economy, and especially in agriculture. So if you look at it, right, you think about Ukraine and Russia both being pretty big exporters of wheat. Ukraine about 10% of wheat, about 14% of exports of corn, I think. Ships aren't leaving Ukraine right now, so you're not seeing any exports there. In addition to that, so that's this year. In addition to that, are people going to be able to plant, grow, and harvest a crop this year? So now you're talking about a two-year potential hit. Maybe even longer than that if this thing drags on. So I think the length of this is going to be very important. Mm-hmm. And the length of the overall economic, move away from agriculture for a second, the length of this is also going to impact the overall economic health of the world. And so the longer it goes on, the more complexity is going to get introduced into the economy. God forbid if it goes wider. Imagine the complexity that will introduce into the economy. So there's just a lot of uncertainty out there around how this is going to go.
Mm-hmm. We talk about the volatility, we talk about inflation, we talk about some of the challenges facing the sector. It makes you wonder why in the heck anybody would want to get involved in it sometimes. But I say all of that to ask you this. Are you seeing interest from some of those younger and beginning producers interested in getting financing to get a leg up in the business?
To give you a sense of it, and you know, I'm forever impressed by the optimism in agriculture, right? Next year is always going to be better. And so we are seeing a lot of entrance into agriculture. Even going back a few years when times were a little tougher, you still saw demand to come in. So to give you a sense of it, in the last 3 years, Farm Credit has made almost 250,000 loans to beginning farmers, new loans to beginning farmers across the last 3 years for almost $50 billion. And so we are seeing demand and we are seeing people trying to come in. And it is a different generation in a lot of places. It's not, I mean, I'm working on a transition plan with my parents' operation. There's still that. But we're also seeing new entrants into specialty crops, new interest into urban fringe agriculture, a lot of different kinds of agriculture that people are getting into.
Well, and just quickly here, as we come up on time, I'm curious, are the entrants folks, you know, maybe fresh out of college, that 22 to 25 bracket, or is it folks maybe in the 25 plus bracket, maybe considering a career change that are choosing production agriculture?
We're seeing a couple of things. One, there are some young people coming in. Probably more common is the person that has another income source, another job, but they're starting to mix that into agriculture. And as they get more productive in agriculture, the other side of their equation comes down a little bit. So we're seeing a lot of people who are not walking out of college and into agriculture. We're seeing them transition from whatever their career is into agriculture. And I think that's where we're seeing more of the growth.
Certainly a lot of growth to be watching for, a lot of challenges to be watching in the ag financial sector going forward. And Todd, we appreciate you joining us.
My pleasure.
We'll be right back to discuss this week's news with our panel. But first, our Hannah Pegel takes a look at farm program spending in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
As Farm Bill discussions ramp up, debates over which farm and nutrition programs should receive more or less funding is up for discussion. Currently, commodity prices are hitting historically high levels, and there is little sign of those figures coming down in the next year. That might mean some lawmakers may see little need to increase funding to farm programs, even though input prices are also soaring. If we take a look at this chart, we see 30 years of data on net cash income, which is designated here in blue. Government payments are in green. When adjusted for inflation, government payments have remained relatively stable over the course of several farm bills, except for 2000, 2005, and 2020. Which was when the federal government was trying to help consumers and producers alike weather the coronavirus pandemic. Farm bill discussions can often lead to thoughts about reforming the farm safety net, but any changes to spending in one part of the farm bill would likely be offset with tweaks in other areas. Phil Brasher has more details on the farm bill in his story on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Farm Credit supports rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services in good times and bad. We provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural homebuyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. As cooperatives, we're locally owned and governed. We help agricultural producers feed the world. For America's farmers, Farm Credit, supporting rural communities and agriculture. Learn more today.
Happy to be joined by our panel this week to discuss a wide range of agricultural economy issues. A panel of experts really starting with Bob Young from Agriculture Prospectus, Randy Dickut from Farmers National, and Ken Barbick with Farmers Business Network. Gentlemen, appreciate you joining us. And Bob, I want to go to you first. Bob, we did see this week the Federal Reserve take action to raise interest rates. raising them officially by a quarter of a point, with announcements to do so a few more times before now and the end of the year. Taking those raises into account, are we going to see this, further interest rate hikes after the one that we're seeing right now, Bob?
Well, I think they've said that they plan on doing up as many as six interest rate hikes over the next couple of years or so. So I think, yes, we're going to see more interest rate hikes. And probably not surprising. I mean, rates have been as low as I can remember for forever, for quite a while. And it's probably time for us to talk about raising interest rates, work on getting a handle on inflation. The longer you put this off, the tougher the medicine is when the day finally comes. And those of us that were around, late 70s, early 80s, know how tough some of that medicine could be. So I think it's probably prudent for the Fed to go ahead and start this process and make it very well known that they're going to talk about, multiple bumps of rates, so that, we can begin to kind of calm ourselves down a little bit.
Bob, is the farm economy in a position to support interest rate hikes right now?
Well, we're not in individual farmers have individual situations, but for the sector as a whole, our debt to asset ratios are not bad at all. Again, we're kind of caught, I think, in, go back again, I hate to keep going back to the 70s and 80s, but, go back to some of the giants of the industry, the Luther Tweetons, the Barry Flinchbaughs, the Ron Knutsons, et cetera, and the conversations that they had at that point in time about a cost price squeeze. And I think that's certainly what our producers are finding themselves in at this point in time. Yes, we're talking about some, very nice prices for corn, beans, wheat. But at the same time, we're talking about some very high prices for inputs. And farmers are caught in that squeeze between, higher input costs and, yes, admittedly, higher grain and oilseed prices. So it's going to be a challenge, I think, for individual farmers as they work through this. They what you got to pay for fertilizer at this stage of the game, and we're going to have more conversation about that in this discussion. But it is going to be a squeeze for some farmers.
Well, and Randy, I want to bring you into the fold now, because obviously anyone that's been watching the news the last several months knows that that inflation has been a big concern for both consumers of food and the producers of it. But I wonder, as you at Farmers National look at land sales, land transactions, things of that nature, are we seeing inflation play any kind of a role at this point in the land market?
Spencer, I think we actually saw some evidence of that in the ramped up buying interest the last quarter of 2021. We saw some more sellers come on the market because they thought about the potential tax law changes. And so they wanted to accelerate their time frame for selling land and, jump ahead of that. Well, that didn't happen, but also the buyers stepped into the market. Farmers were more interested as they came off of some better income years, and the 2021 grain prices and yields were better than anticipated. And so they had stepped into the land buying market, and then also the individual investors were looking at a safe investment long term, and also that typical real estate investment that's an inflation hedge.
Mm-hmm. Ken, and bringing you in here, wondering, a lot of folks looking at the general health of the farm economy, the rising input costs, wondering how those two will overlap going forward, and how should observers expect those rising input costs to impact the overall health of the farm economy?
Yeah, that's a great question. As I think Bob referenced earlier, we're seeing that squeeze between costs and prices right now. We've seen in a recent report that FBN did that input prices have risen pretty dramatically over the last year, with key chemicals like glyphosate rising over 150%. We've obviously seen a lot of press on the fertilizer side on inputs. And we expect those increases in the marketplace to probably remain pretty strong throughout this year. We have seen that farmers are still waiting on some of their chemical purchases. So they've acquire quite a bit of what they need. But as of early February, a survey we did, they're still waiting on about 30% of their chemical purchases for the year. So I think they're going to continue to feel some of that increase in the marketplace. And then, you know, looking at the rising prices, you know, I think that it's going to be a concern, not just for this season, but as we go into the next calendar year as well, as you bring in some of the global volatility that we're seeing as a result of the Russia-Ukraine situation. This is not going to be something that resolves overnight from the analysis that we've conducted.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
It takes a seed to grow. That simple idea inspires and informs the team at marketing, communications, and consulting agency, Curious Plot. Our 2022 Seed to Succeed Pro Bono Grant Program will offer $75,000 worth of in-kind services to a nonprofit organization in the agriculture, food, or animal care markets. Organization nominations are accepted until close of business on March 18th. Learn more at curiousplot.agency.
Welcome back. We've talked about the things currently weighing on the farm economy, but what about those factors that will be shaping the ag sector going forward? Our panel takes a look. Randy, looking at just kind of the broad impact or the broad trends that we're seeing in land prices, they certainly aren't going down. There's been some upticks there. Wondering, do you see that tapering off at all? Do you see any kind of a cliff coming up, or should we expect to see a continuing rise in land values?
Now, that's the crystal ball, Spencer, and everybody wants to know that one. Currently, with the situation we're in right now, here in the U.S., we're looking at going into the spring planting season with some uncertainty on the weather and expanding drought. Is that going to affect this crop year and our supplies of our basic grain commodities and our meats? When the world is facing a huge uncertainty right now and restrictions and the ability to produce enough. So I think this is going to, far as on the grain price, meat, supplies and price will last a number of years. So our current situation is supporting where the land prices are. They do seem to have taken another 10 to 20% jump since the first of the year. So it's really surprising. And I think a lot of that has happened in the last 4 or 5 weeks due to the conflict in Ukraine.
Well, and Bob, there's the Ukraine, there's input costs, there's all kinds of different things to pay attention to in terms of trying to assess the overall health of the farm economy. From your standpoint, what indicators are going to be most important to monitor between now and the end of the year as we're tracking, again, that overall health of the farm economy?
Well, again, I think overall, look at net farm income and changes that we see there, that that's the ultimate reflection of this cost price squeeze. How fast are input costs going to go up? How fast are grain prices and oilseed prices going to go up? And, the interplay between those two. I would be watching, longer term as ERS and USDA report debt to asset ratios. If that starts to tick up sharply, then that's a pretty good indication that we've got ourselves a problem. Rollover debt would be another big indicator that I'd be watching for. If that rollover debt starts to really tick up, that's another indicator that we've got a problem. These are going to be indicators of the sector as a whole. Individual producers are going to face their own individual problems. What we might talk about for, agriculture overall doesn't have any application whatsoever to that specific farmer.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Ken, I want to wrap up with you here because obviously there's been a lot of talk about input price concerns, but also you mentioned some input availability concerns that you all are hearing from producers. And obviously producers are going to need the inputs that they need for the current growing season right now. But at a certain point, companies need to start planning for that next growing season. As we see looming global conflicts going on with a number of areas that produce some pretty important inputs that are needed for farmers and ranchers, at what point do you expect input providing companies to start worrying not only about providing for the 2022 growing season, but also about inputs for that 2023 growing season?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think, from our perspective at FBN, we have, have a vertically integrated approach. So we're, pretty well attuned to what the farmer-grower need is, and then we also have access directly to some of the technical material and whatnot for some of the key crop protection inputs, especially. I think some of what USDA just announced on the fertilizer side is important with additional resources to try to expand domestic capabilities. I think that's something we need to look at across the input supply chain. A lot of what we get on the crop protection side comes from overseas. So, you know, again, that's an area where if we saw, you know, additional global disruptions, that could have a significant impact on availability in future years. So I think we would be eager to see more attention given to how we can continue to look at domestic capabilities in some of these areas to mitigate some of the risk for farmers here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously a growing season to watch and a lot of folks still on edge about what things are going to be looking like here once March turns into November and December eventually. And Randy, Ken, Bob, we appreciate you joining us to discuss that that and many other things here today. We'll be right back with more Newsmakers, but first, Hannah Pagel takes a look at targeted Capitol Hill spending in this week's Map It Out.
Earmarks are back in Washington, and a closer look at the lawmakers who have outsized influence on Capitol Hill reveals the ones sending the most money back to their states. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle secured earmarked funding in the fiscal 2022 spending package. But much of the USDA funding is designated by states and districts represented by members of the House and Senate Appropriations Committees. The senator pulling in the most funds for her state was Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin, who also chairs the Agriculture Appropriations Subcommittee. She is credited with 9 agriculture earmarks, totaling nearly $56.4 million, of which includes a $39.7 million grant to the University of Wisconsin to build a plant germplasm facility. Second to Baldwin is longtime Vermont Democrat Pat Leahy. He is currently the chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee and is a longtime member of the Senate Ag Committee. He helped secure more than $26 million in USDA funding for his home state. Vermont has the second fewest people in the nation and received the second most earmarked ag funds in the country, more than double what California, the nation's most populous state, received. Vermont was ranked the 41st state by USDA and agriculture output in 2020. If you'd like to learn where more USDA earmarked funding is going, Garrett Downs has more in his story on AgriPulse.com. For this week's Map It Out, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Join us for the 2022 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. Speakers will discuss the groundwork for the next Farm Bill on March 21st at the National Press Club and through our virtual experience. Register today under the Events tab at AgriPulse.com.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the week to come. The Senate Judiciary Committee will hold a series of confirmation hearings for Ketanji Brown Jackson's nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court. Also in the Senate, the Commerce Committee on Tuesday is expected to consider the Ocean Shipping Reform Act. It will be National Ag Day across the country and in the nation's capital. An agriculture showcase is in the works on the National Mall that will include some of the most advanced farm equipment in the world, but also remarks from agriculture leaders, including Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack. And of course, the AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit will take place at the National Press Club on Monday. There's still time to register for the event on our website, and don't forget about the reception that takes place after the conversation. As always, stay tuned to AgriPulse.com for the latest developments in ag and food policy. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.